This past week saw Pope Francis make his tour of the U.S. His stops included, of course, Washington, D.C., where he met with Obama and was the first pope in history to speak to a joint session of Congress. Among the pope's priorities is the promotion of concern for global warming and the sharing of his ideas about what to do about it. His ideas, featured in a 184-page document released earlier this year, give some, including my next guest, reason for concern. Here to talk about this matter is a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, best-selling author whose latest book is The Liberal War on Transparency, Confessions of a Freedom of Information Criminal, in quotes. We say good morning to Christopher Horner. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Chris.
ChrisHornerOnline.com and CEI.org are the two key websites for Mr. Horner. And when you look at the Pope's pontification of global warming, and he seems to just fall into the same trap of the much parroted science of 97%, and strange thing is, he talks about the temperatures warming, but if he looks in his homeland, the southern hemisphere, the temperatures are actually cooling there. How much of a prop is the Pope becoming in the debate with global warming?
That's actually very well put, for the reason that the things you've said and things I'm going to touch on indicate his advisors are not completely filling him in, and it's possible that they're all uninformed about the realities of what he's calling for and why he's calling for it. But let's just point it out. He's saying that this is about the climate, but there is a consensus. There's a consensus that none of the policies he's saying are moral imperatives would actually detectably impact the climate after a century of perfect implementation. Pause, wait for laughter. So we know it's not rationally about the climate. It's not urgently about the climate. Nobody actually claims it would impact the climate. But now the new spin is it's a moral issue. It's about social justice. It's about protecting the most vulnerable. Well, implicitly, that means by impacting the climate, but we know nobody claims it impacts the climate. What does this do to the most vulnerable? Well, we have a president who the Pope's coming here to echo on these issues, who used to lecture us, like the Pope is today, on it to Congress, lecturing us to go look to Europe if we want to see how these policies work.
Right.
You may remember he stopped giving those speeches when he was embarrassed about Spain after he said Spain's an economic miracle because of this. People looked and checked. He then said Germany a lot. He no longer gives that speech. Germany is a catastrophe on these issues. But we went and looked. Obviously, that's how we informed people about the 2.2 jobs lost for every temporary green job created and so on. But they're killing people. And that's really the top line here. You just go to Germany's headlines in English at Der Spiegel, or you go to England, where, of course, the headlines are in our native tongue, and you see that the seniors, the most vulnerable, are being killed by these policies by the tens of thousands. In Germany, electricity is a luxury good, according to academics, social poverty groups, the government, the environment minister. In the UK, just last week, they announced that something just under 15,000, 14,870 something seniors were killed, unable to adequately heat their homes last winter because they've priced energy out of the reach of many people through these policies. They call it fuel poverty there. It's energy poverty. So we see they're killing people. They're killing the most vulnerable. And now the reason for doing it is in the name of protecting the most vulnerable. Essentially, we have to kill them to save them.
And now when you see with the EPA's new rules and regulations of what that is going to entail, with more regulations on nuclear industry, coal industry, while at the same time the Obama administration is throwing down a welcome mat for Iran to develop their quote-unquote nuclear industry.
Right. Not a whole lot of consistency here. We're not supposed to export oil, but boy, Iran sure is now, and so on. Kill seniors in the name of protecting them. Climate policies, which it turns out have no impact on climate, but they're even more urgent. Not a lot of consistency, no hobgoblins burdening these minds. But if we get past all of the inconsistencies which you find in political rhetoric and all of this fog of warming, you do see that there are real-world impacts from what they're doing. Heaven forbid the projected real-world impacts of the Iran capitulation come to fruition. But what we do know is, on this global warming front, people will die as a fairly direct result because they're forcing you. Go to eelegal.org and watch a two-minute video of just some of the headlines in Ireland and in Scotland, both. A third of seniors, the newspapers say, are forced to choose between heating and eating. When they choose to eat, they then can't heat their homes. There are bookstore employees, and we show some of the headlines, saying, "We think burning books is wrong. But the seniors are trying to stay alive. They really like the thick hardback copies. So since we'll probably destroy these anyway, we might as well give them to them to stay alive. Do we really want to go down that road? And particularly claiming the moral high ground and doing it, completely turned on its head.
Christopher Horner, who is a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, best-selling author's latest book, The Liberal War on Transparency, Confessions of a Freedom of Information, quote-unquote, criminal, chrishorneronline.com and cei.org are the appropriate websites, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. You're talking about heating, too, Chris. Let's go with feeding on the other side of that, too, because according to the one study I saw, in 2011, 6.5% of the world's grain went to producing biodiesel fuel instead of actual food, contributing to food spikes. That's for certainly, well, obviously, in the world's poorest countries, and even in America where we have a hunger problem, which a lot of people want to overlook. That's not exactly a benefit for mankind.
No, we've got this craze. It's a Western, white, rich fetish of now in the United States, we put 40% of our corn crop into our gas tank. This led to, as you recall recently, not only the price of energy being embedded in everything, increasing the cost of things, but also you saw food riots in typically stable places like Pakistan, I'm kidding, to faraway Mexico. Food riots over the price of corn products after we've stuffed 40% of our corn crop into our gas tank. They're clearing rain. They're clearing forests where the Sumatran ape lives to feed Europe's biofuel fetish and so on, palm oil. This has got to stop. You continue to see, whether it's the Volkswagen scandal where they say, oh, yeah, we have a public health crisis from increasing NOx emissions because we fetishized greenhouse gas emissions. All of these so-called unintended, unforeseen consequences, many of them were foreseeable, and frankly, many of them are intended. When the president says necessarily skyrocket, necessarily is the more important word here. This is not a bug. It's a feature. The point is to price things out of your reach so you use less of it. But what happens? You kill the most vulnerable. It's like they didn't think about it, even though at the time, whether it was green jobs or the environmental impacts of the palm oil craze, we were pointing out. There is the unseen, of course. There's what's seen, what you want to do, and your ideas, and what feels good, and then there's how it works. We just can't get that through the minds of the statists, I suppose.
Mentioned the expanded EPA regulations on domestic energy, too, and the company line is that, well, there's this whole grandfather clause situation, existing sources, the new rules need not apply, but if you dig deep into the rules of the EPA that were issued back in, I think that was in August, EPA will consider a well site to be modified and subject to the proposed requirement when a new well is completed or an existing well is fractured or refractured after the effective date of the rule. So the grandfather clause has a caveat to it, apparently.
Right. New power plants, existing power plants. New wells, existing wells. There are not many loopholes that these folks will intentionally create. It's pretty deliberate what they're up to, and they've said, the president said as a candidate, he wants to see our energy prices go to where Europe's are. He expressly said he wants our gas prices to go there, just not so fast that people notice. He then appointed an energy secretary, and I assume this issue came up in the interview, who gave an interview to the Wall Street Journal saying, somehow we have to get our gasoline prices up to Europe's levels, somehow. Well, that somehow in a global market means through government policy, to reduce availability, taxes, and so on. The idea is they're not against everything. They're very pro-scarcity, and that's what these policies are designed. They don't like abundance, much like the Pope reflects in his lecture to Congress this week. They don't like abundance. They think it's a bad thing. But someone is not telling them about the downsides of their essentially rationing policies or even the upsides of prosperity.
Which the Pope pretty much spoke out against technology and wants us all to slow down, which sort of runs counter to at least the American way of really any developed country's way of trying to find exceptionalism. And that's a word that bothers way too many people, too. We're wrapping up our time with Christopher Horner, CEI, Competitive Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow. His latest book is The Liberal War on Transparency, Confessions of a Freedom of Information Criminal, chrishorneronline.com and CEI.org. And speaking of your latest book, Chris, it kind of ties into the state of affairs, because the less the people are allowed to know, the more the people in control are allowed to get away with, apparently.
Right, and this again is very deliberate and from the top. In it, I revealed the false identity of the EPA administrator that I found. Richard Windsor was actually Lisa Jackson. The use of private email accounts. Lisa Jackson at EPA used a Verizon.net account to correspond with green groups. EPA wrote its power plant rules on a Yahoo account belonging to a staffer named Michael Gu with Sierra Club and so on. They're very deliberately moving government over to Gmail, to text messaging. Text messaging they're not preserving, they're even destroying. Okay, in the old days we used to walk down the hall and poke our head in the office. Now you don't want to do it. You're going to want to do it. If you don't want to create a record, don't create a record, but don't do things unlawfully. And we have caught them in an epidemic of moving government over to private resources, as the Secretary of State also showed us, to try to protect it from disclosure. That's not only contrary to and against the law. In many cases, it's criminal.
Lisa Jackson, very well known in New Jersey. She was the head under John Corzine, who was governor at the time of the state DEP, and her brilliant brainstorm regarding the excessive number of bears in the hostile confrontations was to spend $1 million of taxpayer money to teach us all how to put our garbage in our garbage cans.
Yeah, the efficiency experts, they're always here to make us do things better. If these ideas are so great, we just have to wonder why she had to move to Verizon and a false identity, and why all the Gmail and Yahoo accounts get... You need to move government back into the public sphere to be consistent with our laws, because there's a reason President Obama said, I'm going to run the most transparent administration in history. People want to hear that because they want to see, as the Supreme Court said, what their government is up to. And these folks apparently don't want us to.
It is a book that is going to make you aware of what you are being denied, and hopefully that will compel you to shout louder to have access to what you have a right to know. And certainly if it involves, if nothing else, the spending of your tax dollars, that automatically gives you the right to know. The book is The Liberal War on Transparency, Confessions of a Freedom of Information Criminal. Chris is a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, ChrisHornerOnline.com, CEI.org. Chris Horner, thanks for being here this morning.